Welcome to Parenting Teens with Dr. Cam, the podcast dedicated to helping you tackle the challenges of parenting teenagers without the drama. I'm your host, Dr. Cam. Let's get on with the show. Have you ever heard a parent say, "Well, I was raised this way and I turned out okay"? Well, there's a bit more to it. Often without realizing it, we end up repeating patterns that pass on mental health issues from one generation to the next. Additionally, we've learned a lot about child psychology and effective parenting since our parents' days. They did what they knew, but now we know a lot more. Today, we're joined by author Carrie Fund, who is at the forefront of breaking the cycle of toxic parenting. She's here to talk with us about how to spot these unhealthy patterns and, more importantly, how to break them. It's all about making things better for our teens and honestly for ourselves too. Carrie, welcome to the show.
Thank you so much for having me. It's truly an honor.
It's great. So give us a backstory first. I always like to ask my guests this. What inspired you to focus? Today we're going to talk about toxic parenting. What inspired you to focus on that?
Honestly, I was working in the beauty industry and doing all of these other things besides talking about toxic parenting. About 10 years ago, I became a mom. I'm now a mom of two young kids, 9 and 6. And I started like really looking into my health because I try to be as healthy as possible. I was seeing all these different like functional medicine doctors, but I just wasn't sleeping well for years. I had crazy anxiety, and I noticed I was such a helicopter mom. Mm. Like, I just was waiting for tragedy to happen. Just catastrophizing everything. And I ended up meeting up with a functional medicine doctor, and she was like, started talking to me about my upbringing. And I'm like, I thought we were talking about vitamin D. Right. Oh, let's talk about your mom and your dad. And I'm like, what? And I broke down hysterical, like a baby, because I didn't realize that all of my pain and trauma from my toxic upbringing that I had just been shoving down and acting like, I'm fine. Everything is fine. Look at me. I'm this perfect mom. I'm doing it all. I'm nothing like my parents. Pain and trauma is like, it sticks in your bones. It just, it stays down deep. And you can try any new workout, any new gym, you can take all the vitamin supplements you want in the world, but it's going to just keep revisiting you until you sort of face it head on. And it's almost like people will ask me in interviews, well, how did you come to start doing this? And it's almost like my pain wouldn't leave me alone. And I realized that I have been carrying my purpose deep within me for such a long time. I just was too scared to look at myself and realize it.
Yeah.
And so I think, you know, my biggest goal in life, honestly, is to not allow my past to come into my own parenting. And so it was really a hard reality to face. Like, wow, I still have a lot of work to do. And since then, I honestly, my mission has been to inspire mothers to be the woman that they were born to be and perhaps the parent that they never had, and to inspire them to break their own toxic cycles that maybe they grew up with or they learned from their parents and just shift to more positive parenting.
Yeah, I love that. And I think there's such a huge shift. And there's two things I see commonly hold people back. The first one is feeling guilty or bad about saying anything bad about their parents and how their parents raised them, and admitting and being self-reflective that what we're doing may not be in our kids' best interest.
Yes.
So there's a lot of shame and ookiness in this, right?
Yeah.
So let's address first, how do we reconcile changing our parenting styles and dealing with what we're saying is, you know, this toxic background and what caused some trauma without putting blame and saying my parents were terrible? Because my parents were amazing. However, yes, there was a lot of things I would do differently now, or I do differently now. How do we justify that?
I think that's a great point. I think that by thanking your parents, what they did and what they didn't do, you're using your past as a roadmap to help create your own parenting guide. And I think that's amazing. There's also people that are like me that didn't have the parents. I was really blessed with two toxic, immature parents. It was really fun to always choose between them. And you know, my mother's no longer in my life. There's estrangement with her. My father lives down the street and I'm currently his caretaker, and he's learned to respect my boundaries. So it's not that, you know, shame keeps us silent. And I feel that by turning up the volume on my voice, it's helped me dissolve a lot of my shame. And it's really given me this sense of self-worth and inner power. And I know that, you know, some things may be hurtful to my parents and things like that. But, you know, at the end of the day, just like I have the choice to do better, so did they. We all have a choice. And maybe things are different now because we have more tools and we realize how much work it is as an inside job to be a healthy person mentally and emotionally. So maybe that has shifted. But, you know, no matter what's going on in life and in times, we all have a choice. And just like I chose to heal and just do better than what I'd learned, I remind myself not to feel guilty or shame, because by me speaking and writing and sharing to inspire others, because I really want moms to win. I want kids to win. And I always remind myself, gosh, if one person maybe would have said to my mother or my father, hey, reality check, or hey, there's a better way, maybe things could have been different. So there's a lot of balance there. And I think it all comes with self-awareness.
Yeah. Self-awareness is a tough one, right?
It is a tough one. Because
we don't always want to see what we see. And so sometimes it's easier just to deny or push away or say you don't understand. And I think one of the key things you're saying too is we know more now. Like
we
can't blame our parents for what they didn't know. That's not fair. And even us, we only do what we know. And so removing that shame of maybe making mistakes, which we're all going to do, because we just don't know. But I love when you keep saying we have a choice. We have a choice to do better. We always have that choice.
We have a choice to do better, and we have a choice to heal. No matter our age, no matter our upbringing, no matter what's going on, we have a choice to heal. Not only for our kids, but for ourselves. I mean, gosh, we have this one life. And I feel like it goes by so fast as mothers that I'm watching my kids grow up so fast. I'm like, am I aging that fast? Because I have a lot of work to do and I can't change my past, but I sure as heck can make the rest of my life with my choices and my power the best possible.
I love it. Yeah.
So, and you know, and you mentioned something about perfect. Like, I would really like to say something about perfectionism, because I am a recovering perfectionist. A lot of my trauma and upbringing made me quite the perfectionist as a young child and a teen and as a woman. Perfectionism doesn't belong in parenting, and we're all going to make mistakes. I make mistakes all the time, and I want my kids to know that I'm not perfect and they're not perfect, and that it's okay to make those mistakes and just to learn and do better. And I feel like that's just the key of it all, is just do better, like try your best. And when you mess up, there's two phrases that I feel like as parents make all the difference in the world. And I wish I would have heard these as a child. I love you and I'm sorry. So I've heard I love you before, but I don't think even at 46 years old, I don't think I've ever heard I'm sorry from my parents. Mm. So I would say, if you can just, I love you and I'm sorry. Not I'm sorry, but I'm sorry.
Yeah, but is the worst word.
I catch myself all the time. I'm like, I'm sorry.
I always say, sit on your butt. Do not use that butt.
Because we're the adults and they're children, and we're supposed to give them the guidance and the tools and just send them out into the world. And we should do that with, you know, all of our being, all of our abilities to help these kids, our children, turn on their inner tools and use them every day and make them strong. Like, treat it like a muscle. That's what I tell my kids.
Yeah. I think there's a big thing too, and I want to get to the signs of how do we know we're stuck in a toxic parenting cycle, right?
Yes.
And I think there's I'm just going to throw that out right now. Let's just go there. What are some signs that we're stuck in a toxic parenting cycle?
You know, I think mine that comes up is, I identify if any of the things that my parents did to me, am I doing or I'm about to do, or am I even doing them in the slightest way? So, I mean, I think not having patience and mom rage is a big one. So, you know, it's a good reminder that, again, we're not perfect and we can all lose our temper and we can be tired and we're juggling so many things. But it's, you know, our voices, I feel, become their voices. So it's a good reminder, like when your kids go to a friend's house and they're out into the world in school, like, what do you want following them around? Because the world is tough. And I want them hearing me saying, you've got this. I love you. I'm here if you need me. Not negative, criticizing, screaming voices. So I feel like, I think the way we talk to our kids is super important. Communication is key.
Yeah, it's so big. Yeah. And I think just saying that, when you think about the thought, your own self thoughts,
yeah,
right, and go, where did that come from? It came from growing up, right? Yeah. And I think there's this belief that's still very strong that the world is tough, so it's my job to toughen my kids up by being that tough presence. And I can't wrap my head around that belief.
Yeah.
It baffles me, but it's so prevalent. Where does that come from?
I don't know. I mean, I honestly don't know, because it took me 40 years. I mean, I'm 46 now. I would say actually probably 43 years to realize that vulnerability is a superpower. Mm. And, you know, being able to be vulnerable and own your emotions and express yourself. I mean, at the end of the day, we can be tough on our kids and we can have these high expectations of them, because we all want our kids to thrive and do well and be successful. But at the end of the day, all of these external, like, rewards and trophies, the grades, the achievements, the schools they get in, what they look like, all of those things are so external that none of them matter. They're honestly worthless in my eyes if our children are not happy and they don't know how to have joy. What's the point of going and getting the best grades and going to a university where our kids are depressed and have anxiety and don't really truly believe in themselves, or they don't know, they're not happy in relationships, or they make bad relationship choices? I mean, there's so many internal tools and their emotional and mental well-being. I feel like, you know, as parents today, we need to focus on those things as much. And, you know, being hard on our kids, who wants to be vulnerable when your parents, the people who love, you know, are supposed to love you the most and actually are your first teachers in love and relationships, are criticizing and mean. Right? That's terrifying. I mean, they're going to go out and marry or date people that only criticize them because they think that that's love.
Yeah.
I mean, these are the things we have to ask ourselves, and we have so much responsibility.
Oh my gosh, it is. So I think, so one of the really big things that you were just saying, signs, is when we're losing our temper with our kids. Yes. And yes. I think this is a hard one for parents to accept, because we tend to say, well, they're making me mad. It yeah. is them that is doing the wrong thing. My reaction is what they're making me do. How is that a sign of a toxic relationship?
Well, I mean, I feel like that communication is a one-way street, because I'm sure a lot of children don't want to open up and communicate and talk to their parents when their parents are loud and criticizing and yelling. So you're creating a one-way street relationship with your parents. And that can be scary as they get older, because I only have young kids. I can't imagine having teens that won't feel comfortable coming to me and talking to me and, you know, asking me for advice or telling me things. So I always tell my kids, you have to tell me everything. Please talk to me so I can, you know, protect you or help you or guide you, because that's what I'm here for. And I mean, yeah, I don't know. Communication. I was never able to talk to my parents, and I kept everything in, which probably fueled my insecurities, my lack of confidence, my eating disorders. So, and being a perfectionist. So communication is a big one for me. I mean, I just think we could remind ourselves, and it's really hard. I'm not saying I haven't lost my temper before, but I say, I love you. I'm sorry. Mm-hmm. I should know better than to talk to you like that. Because sometimes, you know, my husband told me probably a year ago, he reminded me when I was getting frustrated that you never know if our kids, you know, they're frustrated too, and they're dealing with big emotions too. And we're the older ones, so we should probably teach them and model how to handle those things. But sometimes maybe our kids are pushing our buttons because they want to just see if we still love them. And that hit me hard, the test, because I have a 9 and a 6-year-old. And I mean, my 6-year-old at breakfast today, I forgot to put a sprinkle of salt on his eggs, and he woke up sort of grumpy. And he's going through a lot of changes right now. And he's like, I hate you. You're the worst mom ever. And the first thing I thought was, well, I know a mom that's worse than me, but I didn't say that. And second of all, I was like, as much as I wanted to be like, that's so rude, or I made you these eggs, I thought, you know what, Harry, I love you. It's okay. Maybe you're having a rough morning. I have those too, but I love you. And I hope you enjoy these eggs that I made you. And I sort of just walked away and I gave him some space. And a couple minutes later, when I came back in with my coffee, he was like, I'm sorry, mommy. And so by me having the self-control and pausing, you know, and I'm not saying I've always done that, but I've learned my lesson. It really gets you nowhere. Acting like a child and screaming at your child doesn't really, you don't win. You're not teaching them anything.
No, you're digging a hole.
Yeah, exactly. You're digging a hole.
Yeah. And then you're like, wait, now why are they getting upset and acting that way? And you're like, reflection time.
Yeah, exactly.
I think also part of this, and disrespect is one that really pushes parents' buttons, like in a serious, serious way. And I've even done stuff like posted, and people get very upset when I talk about what disrespect actually may, like we're receiving it as disrespect doesn't mean their intention is disrespect. Right. And people have trouble taking anything or looking past anything that feels disrespectful to them. And to me, that's a sign of toxic, yes. A toxic relationship and having trauma from our childhood.
Yes.
Do you agree? And can you explain that?
I completely agree. I never had, you know, I never had the space for my own feelings growing up. And no one really asked me like how I was feeling or what I needed or to talk about any things. It was always about my parents' feelings, my parents' issues, my parents' battles. And I used to get triggered all the time when my daughter was younger. She wouldn't listen to me. And I can still hear myself saying, you know, I'm your mother. You're going to respect me. And it's almost like I would revert back to that child. And I would be saying to my daughter the things I should have said to my parents. Like, I need you to hear me. I'm a person too. And it's like, wow, I am not going to let my past parent my children because my daughter has no idea what this is about. Right. And I'm trying to protect her from all of that. So I sort of need to have the self-awareness. It really comes back to self-awareness that, you know, that's where the self-awareness and the healing has to go. And healing is hard work. It's not linear. And listen, we're all busy moms and we work and we're raising kids and it's absolute chaos as much as it is just amazing. But you have to do the work. You have to do the healing. You have to get self-aware because my kids, our kids are not our parents. So if we want to say something to our parents, we should call them up and say, listen, and maybe some people need to do that. You know, I've had to say to my dad before, like, these are my boundaries with my kids. And he would say, well, why? Like, we didn't grow up in the same house. And I would say, right. Well, because dad, you know, I didn't have the space for this, or you guys didn't do this. And these are the things I'm doing with my kids. So being vocal and turning up the volume on my voice a bit has allowed me to see, you know, how I communicate with my kids. What I say to them is not coming from this hurt inner child that's reverting back to, you know, the Carrie that didn't have a voice or didn't have, you know, didn't stick up for herself, didn't demand things. Like, you know, if it's hard for me to control myself in my 40s, like I can't imagine a 6 and a 9-year-old. They don't even know what's going on.
I know. And they don't have any of the skills or any of that developed yet. So it's like, how can they?
Yeah.
Harry, let's talk about this the self-awareness.
Yes.
How do we, especially in a world that does not slow down for us ever, how do we make the space? And then what do we do with that space to become more self-aware?
I think boundaries is the biggest thing. I mean, you have to create space for yourself. And, you know, sometimes I see really popular moms creating reels on Instagram and they're making fun of the other moms that are trying to say, you know, meditate for 5 minutes in the morning or wake up 30 minutes before. And I just want to like yell at the screen and say, Listen, I know how long it takes to create a reel. So you created that reel to tell other moms, we don't have time even for 2 minutes to close our eyes in the morning and drink coffee. Like, you had time to do it. So don't tell me. I know how long it takes to create a reel and edit it. So even if you're a wizard now and it only takes you 15 minutes, that's 15 minutes of self-care and space you could have used in the morning. Priorities, people. And so, you know, I'm glad you mentioned priorities because, you know, as someone who has always wanted to be a super mom and a perfect mom and realizing that I can be a perfect mom but not a happy mom and what do my kids really need, self-care is not selfish. And even if you have 15, 20 minutes a day, whether it's your morning rituals or your bedtime rituals, carve out space that's purely just for you. Maybe it's meditating in the morning. Maybe it's reading a chapter in a book, whether it's just like a novel for entertainment or like a self-help book. Maybe it's, you know, sometimes even writing out my to-do list or listening to like a song while I'm drinking my coffee. Just having, you know, self-care doesn't mean having to get a facial and a massage and do all of this stuff. It's just little small rituals that you can incorporate every day. That's all of your space that sets you up for the day. It's almost like when we wake up our kids in the morning, we don't want to rush. We want them to have a nice breakfast and we want them to feel good to set them up for success for the day. That's what self-care should be for moms. And I actually was talking to somebody the other day, and instead of using self-care, because when we hear self-care, we all of us are like mom guilt. We feel selfish. She used
eye roll.
She used something else. Oh, well, it was like transformation. So like sometimes when you're picking your kids up at school, you want to have like a transformation moment where you're letting your kid shut down for the day, get into the relaxing routine of being home, dinner, bedtime. Well, have like a transformation period where like you're waking up or you're going to bed and you're doing a couple of things that bring you joy to transform you into the mom on duty, you know, that's about to go to work, or you're picking up your kids from school, like whatever it is that gets you mentally, you know, peaceful. She actually told me that she started after, like, she would come home from school with her kids. She would go take a hot shower quickly, put on some nice pajamas before going to dinner and to dinner cooking routine. And it just felt like a luxury. She had 10 minutes to herself. She had on her pajamas and she cooked dinner. And that just made her more peaceful through the chaos of dinner and bedtime routine. And I thought, wow, washing the day off your face before getting into bedtime routine, that sounds like a luxury. 10 minutes.
Yeah, that's it. That's the thing. It doesn't take a lot of time. And I think not only does it enable us to show up the way we want to show up for our kids, which is a bonus, right? Which is where the selfishness is completely flipped on its head right there, because we're creating a better parent for our kids.
Right.
The other thing is we're modeling to our kids to take care of themselves, not to completely run yourself ragged for everyone else. We've got this generation of people pleasers that are just beyond themselves. And we grew up because that's how we grew up.
Right.
Was you pleased everyone, your parents, your teachers. That's how you got through. And now we have no ability to take care of ourselves, and we feel guilty and shameful for that. And it's a dangerous precedent to set for our kids.
100%. I mean, honestly, I just started healing and talking about this stuff 2 years ago. Two years ago, I was the mom that did everything. I hosted all the play dates. I threw all the fabulous birthday parties. I was on two kids, room parents for both kids, PTA, every meeting. Carrie Fun did not skip a beat.
Wow.
I was exhausted. I was not enjoying anything like I should have, because how can you? You're just a constant task and thing to do list. Like even like at night when I would go to sleep, my mind, that's why I wasn't sleeping. And I'll tell you, and this may come off, you know, rude, but I started saying no and saying yes to myself and no to everything. I am one room parent for one class. Next year I'll flop them even if I want to. I do not commit to every volunteer thing. Actually, I haven't volunteered for one thing this year, not one thing, because the time has to come from somewhere. And my kids know that I am at every game, every practice. I cook every meal. I don't have a village. I don't have a mom. I don't have a nanny. So I show up for them all day long throughout the day. I don't have to then go and do that in every way of their school or for every thing necessary. So just little by little, I started saying no. And I was like, wow, there's a lot of free time in the day. in between grocery shopping and doing podcast interviews and writing a book and walking my dogs, there's like, you know, I've created like an extra hour and a half of my day by stop saying yes to everything and everyone else and learn to just say, you know what, I'm a priority and I can take care of myself and I can love myself. And making myself a priority does not take away any love from my children or my family. And that took a while to learn, but I'm happier and my kids have not noticed the slightest difference that I am not at every school volunteer function or I am involved in everything. They actually told me they sort of like having more space.
I was going to say it's funny because we run ourselves ragged to do all of this stuff for our kids. Then we get angry at them for not appreciating all that we do. But the thing is, they're not asking us to do all that.
Right.
So then we're running ourselves ragged. We're angry at them. We just don't need to do it. Like, stop doing it. We're not angry at them and exhausted. Like, that's doing everyone a favor when we do that. And I think it's hard because, again, we place our value, and this is, again, toxic parent where we grew up.
Yeah.
We put our value in what we are constantly producing, being productive, showing up, and we put zero value in just being.
You know, that is a beautiful point, and it really comes down to our self-worth, like realizing and saying to yourself, you are lovable and your family loves you no matter what. Like, you, I really just honestly have to show up and love my kids, and everything they truly need is free. I mean, space, communication, saying I love you, saying I'm sorry, like, just my kids would love to just, if I lay on the floor and I'm watching them play or just cuddle and watch a movie, like, they don't need all of these things that we think make us these perfect parents.
Right.
It's so simple, but it's knowing our worth, that we are worthy of being loved and we are lovable without proving ourselves in any certain way.
Yeah. And then to be able to trickle that down to showing our kids that they are lovable without having to constantly do and produce and be and succeed and everything else, that we now show where their value is.
100%.
And I think that's hard for us too, because we're trying to create kids that we view as valuable by molding them and making them to do all these things we think has value. And in the meantime, we undermine their value as a person, their value as having their unique ideas and their unique dreams.
You're right.
And that's really hard, because that's where that cycle continues, isn't it?
It is. It is. You know, one of the little things, I sometimes leave post-it notes around the house for myself. And I wrote a little note probably a couple months ago in my bathroom mirror that says that I have to embody the same things that I want to teach my kids. Like, how do you raise authentic kids? Like, how can I do that if I don't embody the very things that I'm teaching them?
Yes.
Like, it's scary. It's scary. So if you really, I mean, honestly, my being a parent and having my children are my reason, like, for pushing my healing and staying on track, because I mean, that's my legacy, you know, my legacy are these people that I'm putting out into the world, and I want them to be strong and vulnerable. I want them to have high emotional intelligence. I want them to have, you know, my kids are always saying, well, what should I take for an elective, or what sport should I do? And I'm like, what do you want to do?
Exactly.
Because I just want you to go and be happy and have joy. I never really chose any of those things in life. And if you looked at me on paper my whole life, even up until I was 40, I look amazing. I have all of these degrees. I was super athletic, all of these awards, the jobs I had in New York City, the things that I've accomplished. And if you would put that aside and write down all of the actual things that maybe I wouldn't have to be healing from, reparenting myself, you know, eating disorders, like, there's so many things. I wonder what I really could have done in life if I wasn't carrying all of this emotional baggage and pain around. And then I wasn't having to spend like my 40s really doing the work so that my past doesn't parent my kids. Like, that's the thing, is like, I just want my kids to be happy. I'm going to be here to help them build this foundation, so when I do send them off into the world without me, they'll go and do their thing. And if they make mistakes, they know that I'm here. But none of it actually matters. It all can look fantastic, but none of it really matters if we're not emotionally and mentally healthy. Like,
yes,
I always tell like people, it's like having a beautiful Christmas tree, well, with ornaments, but it's dead because you forgot to water it. So it's like something's missing. Like you can put all these fancy decorations on it, but if you forget to water your tree and take care of the actual tree, you've just got a dead decorated Christmas tree.
I love that visual. That is a great, I'm going to steal that visual. That's a really good visual.
Seriously. And then you're looking at it and you're like, well, it sort of looks pretty, but it's dead.
Let's
and it's
throw like, more pencil on it. And
yeah, let's just keep decorating it. So
look great. It is so true. And I see parents, you know, they're like, they're miserable and their kids are miserable because they're fighting all the time over all of this, all of these things that they need do, you know, the grades and doing the sports. And I'm not saying none of that's important. Doing our best is definitely important, but I think the focus gets switched on the outcome and gets switched on the switch to like the resume building and all of those things. And the core piece that matters is that relationship and the self-worth get completely demolished in the process.
Yes.
And it's like, if you want your kids to succeed, you got to focus on the piece that you're completely hurting right now.
100%. I mean, imagine like, and I totally agree with you. All of those things are important. You want to set your kids up for success, but imagine them going after success and figuring out who they're going to be in the world or what their dreams are, or what they're good at. If they have like high self-esteem and high self-worth and the confidence to do so. I mean, like teaching your kids, like letting your kids know that you believe in them and then teaching them at the importance of believing in themselves. Like, you know, one day when they walk into their first job interview, or one day when they, I don't know, are saving the world or changing the world in their own way, imagine the power that they will have within them to do all of those things. Even when there's rejection, or even, you know, it's even like setting them up when you're even how to deal with rejection. Like, I don't know. I feel like if you work on those inner tools, like kids can handle anything. They really can handle anything. You can create a resilient little human being by focusing on internal as much as you do external.
Hey parents, feeling overwhelmed? You don't have to do this alone. Join the Thriving Parent Academy, where community support is everything. Member Tracy said, "We all developed at an exponential rate together." And Carrie admitted, "I didn't think I needed this, but it's a life game changer." Don't wait. Join us at thrivingparent.org and use promo code THRIVE20 for 20% off your membership. Let's thrive together. I think, Carrie, what's coming to mind too, and another thing I think people struggle with, is that line between being confident and resilient and being entitled and egotistical, right?
Yes.
So I think parents often have this fear, or they see things that their kids are doing that they're like, oh my God, my kid is so entitled. Oh, they're a brat. Oh, they're this. I got to curb it back now by pushing them down, because now their head's getting too big, or they're becoming rude. How do we separate those two things?
You know, that's a really good question, and I've never really thought about that. You know, we're really big on, I feel like sometimes if kids were acting like that, like the overconfidence and sort of just like the not so nice, like being a team player or just being a kind human being, maybe they're overcompensating for something.
Exactly.
Maybe it's time to look at that and be like, maybe they're needing attention. Maybe there's something missing. Maybe that's sort of like not a cry for help, but it's like, a, you know, something maybe is like putting the spotlight on that. And then as their parent, we need to say, okay, why? Because I really, you know, again, my kids are only 9 and 6. So for everyone that's listening that has teenagers and want to eye roll here, listen, bigger kids, bigger obstacles. And my 9-year-old is giving me some obstacles now. So I am in no way saying. That teens are, you know, I know I have a lot to look forward to, but I don't know. I feel like this is where you just have to keep reassuring them. Like I, you know, sometimes when my daughter, she's an amazing tennis player and she's already competing in USTA at 9 years old. Sometimes she gets a little cocky out there on the when she's doing matches and she'll do these dances and she'll do this. And as much as I want her to like have the joy and be proud of herself, I teach her about grace. I'm yeah. like, let's have some grace. You can be proud of yourself, but show some grace. And that leads into just even, you know, grace when it's talking to your teachers, having manners at the dinner table. Like, there's nothing wrong with grace. Grace is a beautiful thing to have. So I think it's a work in progress. I mean, but if kids are being overly, you know, or it's not sort of healthy, maybe that's like something that's like needs to be looked at a little more, like they're needing something.
Yeah, I think people are not mean if they feel good about yeah. themselves. I mean, they just don't. So yeah. I think you're right. When we try to push them down to curb it, we're just adding more fuel to what's causing them to be that way anyway. Yeah. And doing that. And I love like teaching about grace, because I think one of the things that we don't realize either is that kids and a lot of adults don't necessarily realize how they're coming across. Like
right.
they're excited, they're showing that, or they're proud, or they're showing that, and they don't realize that other people are perceiving it, which isn't their fault that people right. are perceiving it that way, but that other people perceive it that way. So it's just, again, the self-awareness,
yeah.
right? And that's something to teach. So let's get into self-awareness for a second. What okay. are some like tangible things that we can do to help improve our self-awareness?
The first two words that come to mind are boundaries and space. Boundaries and space.
Hardest things for women.
They're hardest things for women, but I mean, honestly, you have to really take the time to be able to self-reflect and create self-awareness. It's like any tool that we have, you've got to sort of use it to make it strong. And I think when we're consumed with life, that it's really hard to be self-aware because you're constantly responding and reacting and doing. So I think setting boundaries and creating the space and just paying attention to ourselves, like the way we react to things, the way we speak not only to ourselves and to our children. Honestly, I have found that having the time to just self-reflect and really sit on the highs and lows of my day, whether it's when I'm falling asleep or those couple minutes when I'm making my coffee and I have that space in the morning, I think it's just been crucial to be able to like reflect on my actions of the day and my reactions. And that's really helped improve my self-awareness.
Yeah. Do you have any techniques that you recommend for doing that? Because I think some people that it comes naturally, some people just go, okay, I'm sitting here, I'm supposed to self-reflect. What does that mean? Because some people don't do it. Yeah. They've never done it. So what does that even look like? I think some people are just like, I'm sitting here, what am I supposed to do?
Yeah. You know what really helped me? A year ago, I bought a journal. Now, it's not one with blank pages. Again, we all have so much to do, and I am in no way saying, wake up and start journaling every day. No. If you don't want to buy, like, they make these journals. They're called, I think they're like motivation journals. But even if you want to take out a pad of paper and a pen, every morning, I started a year ago. I write the date. I write how I'm feeling. Today I'm feeling, and it's just one emotion, anxious, frustrated, happy, motivated. Something I want to accomplish today could be one word. And then I write five things I'm grateful for.
Yes, love it, love it.
Five little things I want to accomplish today. Mm. So my like today I woke up, today I'm feeling excited. I was going to be a guest on your podcast today. I've been looking forward to it. Today I want to work on, and I put inner peace because it's been very chaotic and crazy lately. So I'm always like, you know, writing that word, inner peace. My things I'm always grateful for, and starting your day, just reminding yourself the things that you're grateful for really help you like deal with the day better. And they're always the same thing. I am grateful for my family. I am grateful for our health. I am grateful for my cozy bed. I am grateful for sleep, and I am grateful for my dogs. Like those are the things I'm always grateful for. Everything else can come and go, but if we have each other and our health, like I'll take it. And then five little things I want to accomplish today. They don't have to be these huge tasks. Mine can be, you know, going for a 20-minute walk, walking my dogs, reading one chapter in a book, drinking a cup of coffee without microwaving it five times. They can be so simple.
I have my half drink. Yeah,
exactly. I mean, this one's been sitting here since I don't even know. But they can be the smallest thing. And it just sort of sticks in your mind. Like your mind's like this little sponge and they just sort of stick in your mind. So then when the person cuts me off in traffic or I'm frustrated about something on email, I just think like, I have my family. I have our health. I got a good night's sleep. Like, you know, everything's going to be okay. Everything's going to be okay. So I feel like with regards going back to self-awareness is starting every morning and just writing out like how I felt when I woke up in the morning and how I want to feel is sort of, you know, I flip through now because I keep them. I flip through now and I can see when I very first started, it was like anxious, scared, frustrated, nervous. And now they're more like peaceful, motivated, excited, determined. So it's all these little things throughout the day are just create these small shifts. And those small shifts really become life changing.
Well, you're rewiring your brain to be more grateful and more positive. And I always tell parents, especially if they're struggling like with their teenager, those five things they're grateful for about their teen. Like let's reshift how we're looking at our relationship and at our kids' behavior by starting to focus on positive things. So anything I think in life that is starting to just gnaw at you.
Yeah.
What can you find that you're grateful for? Because that helps you shift your approach and that changes everything. Carrie, what is one thing you want people to walk away with today? One key nugget.
I want people to walk away with the reminder that you have a choice. We always have a choice in our healing and our parenting. No matter our upbringing, no matter our experience, we have a choice at any moment and any time, today, tomorrow. And when we have that choice, remember, perfectionism is a lie. It doesn't belong in parenting or life in general. So be gentle with yourself and just do better.
Yeah. Love it. How can people find you?
You can find me at carriefund.com. And then Instagram is my main platform at carrie.fund.
Perfect. Carrie, thank you so much for joining us today.
Thank you so much for having me. Truly an honor. I love everything that you're doing. It's so important. So
thank you
for sharing your message and all the work that you do.
Right back at you. All right. See you, everyone. And that's a wrap. Thank you, parents, for taking time out of your busy day to listen in. I appreciate you. If you found the episode enlightening, please like, review, and share with a friend navigating the teen years. Until next time, stay curious. Remember, there's always more to the story than what you see.